Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a little bit snarky about all things books. This is a brand new podcast, so if you like it, I'd really love your support. Please spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, and rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Rating, reviewing, and subscribing really helps new listeners find us. Let's get rolling. This week, Catherine, otherwise known as Read With Cat on Bookstagram, is joining me. She has a blog called From A to Pink, where she writes about books and life as a cystic fibrosis patient. And she's one of the four Catherines who founded the Bookly Club, which is an online book club that has a seasonal theme for each month's selection. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the podcast. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
I saw on your Instagram that you are a big Friday Night Lights fan.
I am a huge Friday Night Lights fan. I just finished rewatching it for the third time.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I'm a huge fan as well. And if anybody that reads my blog probably knows that by now. But I rewatched it. I think ESPN2 might have re-aired it a couple years ago. And I rewatched it. And I did try to go find it on Netflix recently and I couldn't, which upset me.
I think it's on Amazon Prime is maybe where
I have that.
Watched
okay.
it. Yeah, I think you should be able to watch it through that.
So you like Tim Riggins, right?
I do. I mean, I also like Matt Saracen, but they're just very different.
They are. There's so many guys to love on that show.
There really are. It's such a great group of characters. I mean, that's really what drives the show, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. And I love that it's a show about football, but not really.
Exactly. Well, one of the books I'm going to talk about is sort of similar in that way.
I know where you're going with this, and I totally agree. So were you team Lila or team Tyra?
Gosh. I liked Lila way more in the beginning. Actually, that's not true. I think I liked her more towards the end. She was a little too goody-two-shoes for me there in the beginning.
Yeah, until she, do I want to spoil this? Everyone's watched the show by now. Until she hooked up with Riggins while Street was in the hospital.
Right, which I kind of liked that. She needed a little bit of some sort of interest to her character.
She did.
I think ultimately I like Tyra because there's more to root for with her character.
Yep. And I didn't like her as much in the beginning, but by the end of the series, I adored Tyra. All right, let's switch gears. You have cystic fibrosis.
I do.
Can you tell us what that is?
Sure. It is a genetic disease that affects really every cell in the body, but primarily the lungs and the pancreas. It varies drastically from patient to patient. So I'll speak just from my experience.
Sure.
I don't have any of the pancreas issues. People who do have a hard time absorbing nutrients and fat, so keeping weight on tends to be an issue. But for me, it primarily affects my lungs, and that means I battle lung infections and inflammation. So I do daily treatments that take about an hour to 2 hours a day to kind of clear out my lungs, along with exercise and stuff like that.
So you can exercise?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I do.
That's And you're encouraged to?
Exactly. That's a considered part of my treatment plan, really.
What kind of exercise do you prefer?
For me, I try to just do what I enjoy. Otherwise, I'm not going to stick to it.
Totally.
The two primary workouts that I'm pretty good at doing regularly are spin class. And then I have a personal trainer who understands the importance of my working out. So we work together once a week to do a combination of weight training and cardio.
Gotcha. Cardio's got to be hard, right?
It is, and I hate it.
I do spin class as well, and I'm sitting there thinking about how I feel, and I'm imagining how somebody that has trouble breathing would feel.
Yeah, so I like classes that I don't have to think about what I'm doing. You know, I can just show up, which I think is why spin class and my trainer works really well for me.
Right.
But spin class in particular, I think, can go your own pace. You don't have to make the bike as resistant as they are asking you to.
So right.
I try to do that. I do have a heart rate monitor on and I look at that too. But I have found that it really does help clear out my lungs. So I do a lot of coughing in those classes.
Right.
I try to choose a bike on the end. I do really enjoy it and feel like I've seen a big benefit.
Good. And if it makes you feel good, that is all that matters.
Exactly. Yep. And if I'm going to stick with it.
Absolutely. When were you diagnosed?
So I was actually diagnosed really late at 16. Most people with CF are diagnosed before the age of 2.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely changed, I think, my experience and the way I've adjusted or continue to adjust. I think I've learned it's an evolving process. There's not, I'm not going to wake up one day and be 100%, you know, used to it or okay with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's been quite a journey for the last 18 years.
And how did you feel when you were diagnosed, when you found out?
I mean, I was a junior in high school, so I went from like being worried about prom and applying to college to like kind of feeling like I had a death sentence.
Do you feel like that now, or have you sort of gotten past that?
It's a hard balance. I try not to focus on it, but at the same time, it does impact a lot of decisions in my life.
Absolutely.
So I try not to look at it as a death sentence necessarily, but more of taking advantage of my health while I have it.
Right.
So I work full time and I'm married. And so my life looks like people's in a lot of ways, but I think I do grapple with those bigger questions more than most 30-some-year-olds.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Back when people were first learning about cystic fibrosis, I mean, it wasn't until, I think I'm going to get this totally wrong, but maybe in the 80s when the actual mutation was discovered, there's been a lot of learning and discovering things about this disease. I mean, just 10, 15 years ago, they learned that we can't even be around each other.
Oh, wait, really?
Yes.
So you should not be around another cystic fibrosis patient.
Mm-mm. So I have never met anyone face-to-face with CF.
Why is that?
We have bacteria that's only dangerous to each other.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay.
So when I go to I have to see my cystic fibrosis clinic every 3 months. And when I go, there are obviously other people with CF there. So we all are encouraged to wear masks and the doctors have to change gowns with every patient and that sort of thing. But other than that, I'm never really in any contact with any people, which has made it pretty isolating.
Do you have an online group that you talk to or not really?
Yes. Thankfully, I mean, the internet has definitely made it a lot easier. The Cystic Fibrosis Foundation has done a lot of really great things to try to connect all of us. There are online conferences. I have been involved in some committees that have worked with the foundation to develop new programs and stuff for people with CF. And so those committees have had other people with CF on them. So I do have friends that I talk to online, but you know, it will never replace getting coffee with someone.
Right. That's hard.
That in some ways, yeah, is harder than the physical aspect, is the mental health stuff that can come with it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what role does reading play with all this? If any role at all?
Sure. I think it's played a few roles. I think it can be an escape for me. Uh-huh. You know, if I'm having a particularly either rough physical health day or mental health, to just kind of escape into something that's light and fun can be helpful.
Right.
As we'll see, I think in one of my choices, it also can be a way for me to find, to be seen, to, you know, read about other people's struggles with their own health. I do tend to lean toward books that cover more serious, some would say maybe sad topics. Just right. Because I think, you know, I've experienced difficulty in my own life. So wanting to read about that and seeing people triumph over it is something that I'm always pretty curious about. So those are probably the two ways that reading has kind of played a role in my life with CF.
That makes sense completely. Yeah. And two pretty different ends of the spectrum.
Right. Exactly. I think it definitely depends on what I'm looking for.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's switch gears.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit quickly about the Bookly Club? How does it work? How do you choose your books?
Sure. It's me and three friends from college. We all were in the same sorority and our names are all Catherine.
I love that. And you all love to read.
We do. We all love to read. It's always interesting when the four of us go out together and introduce ourselves. Two of us live in New York. One is in Chicago and I'm in Baltimore. So we kind of founded this as a way to stay connected to each other and share our shared love of reading. So the blog came first, followed by the Instagram account. And Katie, one of the two Katies, there's Katie, Kate.
Do you have numbers that you call each other?
We should.
Like Catherine 1, 2, 3, and 4?
We should. It does get really confusing. I'm like, wait, which Katie? But Katie C runs the Instagram account. And so every year we have 10 different themes. We combine December and January and June and July. I should know this by now. But
That's right.
10 different themes that we choose based on kind of that time of year. So February is a romance. March is from book to screen. And so stuff like that. And we basically just all throw in 2 to 3 suggestions in each category, and then we vote. And that's how we choose the books. We try to make sure there's a range, you know, in terms of diversity and subject matter. And
sure.
Everything has to be under 400 pages, too. That's our one.
I love that criteria. Yeah. Yeah, that I keep a list on my blog of book club recommendations, and I don't put any overly long books on there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just hard. Not everyone has the time to invest in a 600-page book. So
no, not at all. And nor, if they are going to invest that time, nor does everyone have the time to do it within a 4-week period,
exactly.
Assuming you're going to do this monthly.
Exactly. And we all, our lives are all very different. You know, 2 of us have kids. One of us is a doctor. I mean, we have to be sensitive.
You have a lot going on.
Exactly. But it's been really fun. And not all 4 of us read the book every month.
Right.
Because again, just depends on what we have going on. But it's been really enjoyable and a really good way for all of us to stay in touch.
And how do all of your book club members participate?
Like I said, Katie C. runs the Instagram account. She really runs the blog, too. She's kind of the one that keeps everything going behind the scenes.
I want one of those.
I know, right? She's great.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, with having my own Instagram account, I try to share the Bookly Club through there.
Right.
And then we all, if we've read the book, we'll write a review on the blog.
Uh-huh.
And I think sometimes we try to share our own photos on the Bookly Club, but most of the time it is Katie who's posting there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. So if y'all are looking for an online book club and you like to read seasonally, it sounds like Bookly Club might be just the thing you're looking for.
Definitely. We would love it if people read along with us.
And you've also been in a real life book club for over 10 years, which
I
think is an incredibly long time for a book club to stay together and up and running.
It's kind of crazy.
It is crazy. So how did y'all meet?
So I found it on Craigslist, which also ages me a bit.
So that makes this even crazier that y'all are still together.
Right. It is really kind of bizarre. I think I don't appreciate it until I talk to other people and they're like, what? Yeah, I moved back to this area after college and I really wanted to find a way to connect with, you know, women my age. And I just happened to stumble upon this book club on Craigslist. And I don't know how many of us there were in the beginning, but most of us have stuck with it all 10 years. We've lost a couple members because they've moved away.
Sure.
That's it. And 2 of them were my bridesmaids.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is really, really cool. And, you know, we all started out as single women living in the city.
Uh-huh.
And now all of us are married. At least half of us have kids.
Yep.
So it's
life
just been really cool. Yeah.
Why do you think y'all have been able to stay together and keep this going? Like, what's the magic sauce you have?
I think that's a really good question. I think at this point, it's the longevity. I wish I had an answer. I think for a lot of us, it's one of our biggest social outlets. You know, I think the older you get, the more precious your time is. And the fact that we just have this history together.
And a pretty intense shared interest, too.
Exactly. Yeah. And we know what has happened in each other's lives. And we've watched each other's kids grow up and all that stuff. I think at this point, it would feel like an immense loss to any of us. I don't know what quite has allowed us to get this far. I think the fact that we've all stayed, that most of us have stayed in the area has helped.
Yeah.
I know for the women who do have kids, it is a chance for them to have some time with just their friends.
I'm a mom and that is so important.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to go somewhere to feel like a human again sometimes. Because sometimes when you're doing nothing but parenting, you stop feeling like a human.
Exactly. I can tell that's exactly how they feel. And their partners are very supportive and know that one Wednesday every month, they're going
to
go.
Yep. Yes. Good for them.
We rotate hosting at each other's houses, which maybe helps too.
Yeah.
I think that can be easier to show up. You know, you can come in your pajamas if you want. Like, there's no pressure. So I think that makes it a little bit easier too.
And does the host each month pick the book or do you have a different process for picking the book?
We don't really have a great process. It really is. We'll just throw out some suggestions at the end of the meeting for the next book. Sometimes we'll pick 2 ahead of, you know, like the next 2 months.
Right.
But really it's just throwing out some suggestions and deciding which one we want to read.
Do people look to you more than others? Yeah. I bet they do.
Especially now that I have this Instagram account.
Sure.
They'll just look at me like, so what are we going to read?
So that might be the best kind of book club to have, where you get to pick all the books, essentially. Right. You're not actually picking the books, but you're heavily influencing every choice.
Yeah, it is really fun. Although sometimes I'm like, oh gosh, what if they don't like this one?
Yeah, it's pressure.
Yeah. Every now and then, you know, someone else will throw a book out there that we pick, and I'm more than happy to let that happen.
Jump on.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to anybody starting a book club or trying to kind of jolt some life into their dying book club?
Sure. I think to start one, it's probably just putting it out there and seeing who's interested. I mean, I know that I've heard from a lot of people who want to start a book club and don't know how.
Right.
So I think it's really just wherever you can reach people. If that's on Facebook, if it's in your neighborhood community forum, if it's at your library or your local bookstore. I think that just saying out loud to people that you want to start one, you'd probably be surprised at how many other people are looking to do the same.
Right. And I also feel like once you put yourself out there as I'm a book person, people talk to you about books all the time.
Yes.
People constantly talk to me about what they're reading, whereas before I did the blog and all that, not that many people would talk books with me.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like once you really make it known, then you've kind of tagged yourself as the book person and people will seek you out.
Yeah.
And as far as keeping, you know, one going or injecting life into one that's fading.
I just feel like I hear from people all the time, well, we have this book club, we kind of all stopped going, or I don't know what happened. It just kind of died out kind of thing.
I will say that I think for us, and I know for some people this isn't necessarily what they're looking for, but for us, the books are important, but the connection is more important.
Right.
So not putting too much pressure, not being like, if you haven't read the book, you can't come.
Sure. Well, then it starts to feel like school.
Right. It's like homework.
Right.
So we just show up, and some of us haven't read the book and some of us have. If the people who have really want to talk about it, then the people who haven't will just step out for a second. If they don't want it to be spoiled for them,
go drink wine on the porch.
Yeah, but just allowing people to show up in whatever way they can, I think, makes it a low barrier to entry and, you know, not too much pressure for people.
I like it. I have to admit that I'm not in a book club. People always find that surprising.
That is surprising. Have you been in one before?
I have. Okay. I was in one in my old town and I joined it to meet people. So the same.
Yep.
Reason is you, I had just moved there. And the reason I ended up dropping out was it went really late at night on a weeknight. And that was hard for me. We would have it at people's houses. Everybody had kids. And so they didn't want the book club to start until the kids went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an 8 o'clock start time.
That is late.
And people would stay till like 11:30. I'm like, I cannot do this on a weeknight. Oh my Lord.
No, ours is on a weeknight, but it starts at 7.
Yeah,
so
that's
I would
good.
Say by 9 o'clock, some people are starting to leave. And by 9:30, it's pretty wrapped up, which even for me, 9:30 is sometimes a little late on a weeknight.
Oh, me too. On a weeknight? Absolutely. Yeah.
But I also do, and I think a lot of us in the book club do this, is we know that that's happening. So we arrange our day in a way that makes it possible.
Yeah.
For me, that means I need to do my CF treatments in the morning before I go to work.
Right.
Because I won't have time after or whatever.
Yeah.
We all have prioritized it in a way that makes it possible.
I think that might be the secret sauce.
I think so, too.
Everyone in the book club enjoys it so much that they make it a priority.
Yeah. Everyone's really dedicated. And there are some people, one of our members, she missed the last book club. And I think it was the first one she missed in years.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. There is definite dedication that I think is what really does help keep it together.
The other thing I had trouble with, I feel like the blog drove me out of the book club in a way.
In what way?
For one, I was reading so many advanced releases and kind of reading on a schedule that I felt like I couldn't fit another book in every month, especially if it was one I was not interested in at all. And secondly, I found the reading community that I was craving through the blog. So I didn't feel like I needed that camaraderie, I guess, around books. I felt like I was getting that without having to stay up till 11:30 and without having to read a book that I did not want to read.
Right. I think that does make a lot of sense.
But I'd be open to trying another one.
What I wonder if, because I'd already been in this book club for 10 years before I found my online book community.
Right.
Through Bookstagram, if that would change things for me. But, you know, for me at this point, it's more about the women that are in the book club than the books themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was seeing, so I was in a book club with people that I saw socially kind of all the time anyway. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I had to go to book club to see them.
Right. Maybe that's part of it too.
Yeah.
It's having that be your its own social circle.
So maybe try to look for one that's outside of your social circle.
Right. And I think in some ways that's better. You don't know who that'll introduce you to. You can maybe be not different, but you know, you aren't bringing all these other relationships into this new setting.
Sure. That makes sense. And I've never thought about book clubs in that way, but it totally makes sense.
Yeah. In some ways, I would suggest not starting a book club with your best friends.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to your recommendations.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I am.
So Catherine is going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she does not love, and one upcoming release she's excited about. So let's start with your first old book you love.
Okay. Anyone who knows me will not be at all surprised by this, but it is Beartown by Frederick Bachman.
Hooray! Anybody that knows me will also not be surprised that I loved it too.
And this is the one I was alluding to that has a Friday Night Lights
similarity.
Yep.
It literally for me was like Friday Night Lights in book, except it for really ice hockey. Is.
And I don't think I realized that until after.
I heard that comparison going in.
Okay.
I didn't read it for a while because I'd read A Man Called Uwe. Is it Uwe?
I never know.
I've heard it pronounced so many different ways.
Me too.
I'm going to go with Uwe for the moment.
Sure.
And I DNF'd it, so I just kind of didn't pick up Beartown and then finally changed my mind. I'm so glad I did.
Beartown was the first of his that I read.
Oh, okay.
And then I listened to A Man Called Uwe.
Gotcha.
And they're so different. So I've always said to people, like, no matter how you felt about A Man Called Uwe, read Beartown anyway. I just feel like they feel very different.
Sure. And I agree from the parts of Uwe that I did read.
Yeah.
If there's anyone out there who has not heard of or read Beartown, tell us a little bit about what it's about and why you loved it so much.
Sure. So it's about this town and its hockey team and this kind of shocking event that happens and how that reverberates throughout the town and its people. And so I think at first when I kept hearing about it, I was like, again, like with Friday Night Lights, I don't care about hockey. Why do I want to read this book?
Right.
But the more people I knew who loved it, the more I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And it's really not about hockey. It's about this town and the people that are in it.
Yep.
It was slow to develop for me at first, which I'm not always patient with. But I'm glad that I was with this one because I think the payoff of that is huge. Bachman does a really good job of developing all of the characters and the town itself in a way that by the end has you so invested and caring about them so much that it just absolutely wrecked me.
Yep.
I think it was one of the first books that like I finished and I just sat there hugging.
And it is an emotionally tough book
it
to
is.
Read.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some trigger warnings.
Which you would not expect for an ice hockey book.
No. Or even for Bachman, I think, if all you've read is maybe A Man Called Uwe.
Right.
Yeah, I think I was surprised by that. It just has such an impact. And it's a really important subject.
Yep.
While tough, it's very, I think, relevant right now.
And I think he does a great job portraying high school.
Yes. Definitely.
In general.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, when it was slow to develop, I was still riveted because I loved his writing about sports and sports culture and how that affects the whole high school, the whole town, and how these athletes get made into kings and are, you know, kind of can get away with anything. And that, even if you're not into sports, you've probably come up against that at some point in your life.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, even if you're not into sports or you have an issue, you know, with sports, he's not super pro. You know, he points out what is controversial.
Like he's both ways. He does point out all the dark sides and addresses the issues. But he also, it's clear that he loves sports.
Exactly.
And he does convey what draws people to sports really well through his writing, I thought.
It's the community of it, I think. And there are pros and cons to being a sports fan, and he doesn't shy away from either, which I really appreciated. I felt like it was a very balanced, realistic perspective of sports, whether or not you're a fan.
I agree. And have you read Us Against You?
I have.
Did you like that as much?
I did. Yeah. I think I put it off for a while because I was like, how can it possibly live up to what I felt about Beartown? And it did. I mean, I think it really was just as well done. I loved it just as much. And I'm not a rereader.
Right.
But I thought about rereading Beartown partly because of like what you said about how you felt in the beginning. I think I'm impatient, so maybe going back and reading it, knowing what's going to happen, would make me more able to take that first part and appreciate it.
So that was Bear Town by Frederick Bachman, and that comes with a double seal of approval from both of us. All right, tell us about the second old book you love.
I'm probably not going to say his last name right, but it is When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi.
Kalanithi? I'm not sure either.
I think you might be right. It's a memoir of a young neurosurgeon who's diagnosed with terminal cancer, and he is writing this book as he's experiencing becoming sick and going from doctor to patient, and he actually passed away while writing the book. So it's both heartbreaking and really hopeful, and this is an example of a book that I picked up because I felt like I would be able to relate to it.
Sure.
Also because he has lung cancer, so there is that
right
breathing, you know, similarity. And I read it probably 4 years ago, and I should read it again. And I just remember it was one of those books where I was like highlighting everything.
Yeah. And I was too, even though I don't have the perspective that you do.
Mm-hmm. I think anyone, it's just about the human experience and how do you find meaning in life? Everyone has struggles, regardless of what they are. And how do you kind of work through those? You know, like I said, I'm just drawn toward books about how people grapple with the terminal diagnosis.
Yep.
And just what it means to live a meaningful life. And I think that is something that a lot of people can relate to.
Absolutely. And he did that beautifully.
He really did.
Relatably, he didn't. And despite the fact that he is a doctor, I felt like he did a great job not falling down the doctor jargon rabbit hole.
Definitely. It wasn't clinical at all. It felt very much like it was just
it's
from
human.
His own perspective. Yeah. Exactly.
And y'all, if you read this, get the tissues out.
Oh, seriously.
Don't read it in public.
Do not. It is short, but it is really powerful.
Gut-wrenching.
Yeah. Totally heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's one of probably the top three gut-wrenching books I've ever read in my life.
I would agree. I think, and it's one of those books that I've gifted to people.
Right.
Because it's just, I think it's just something everyone could stand to read. I hate saying that. Like, not everyone needs to read every book, but this is one that I just feel like you really can take something from about what's important.
I agree. You probably heard this, but I want to share it in case the listeners haven't. Paul Kalanithi's wife, who wrote the final chapter of When Breath Becomes Air, ended up marrying, I hope I get this right, the widower of Nina Riggs, the author of The Bright Hour, which was a memoir about her battle with cancer and was compared to When Breath Becomes Air a lot in the media. So they actually ended up getting together, and I believe they're now married.
Yes, I think they are. I loved that story.
That's a great story.
The Bright Hours on my shelf, but I haven't read it yet. I'm sure it's another one that'll resonate.
Sure. I have not read The Bright Hour either.
But yeah, I think that's just such a fascinating story. I kind of love it. I could see how that would happen.
And y'all, I will link to the news article about that story in the show notes.
Yeah, and Paul Kalanithi's wife is also the twin sister of a fairly well-known blogger, A Cup of Joe.
No way.
Yes.
I did not know that. I read A Cup of Joe. Joanna Goddard.
Yep, it's her twin sister.
I had no idea.
I know, I love random connections like that.
Oh, that's very cool. And I'll link to A Cup of Joe in the show notes as well. It's a cool blog. It's like a lifestyle blog, but she also talks a lot about books there.
She does.
All right, let's move on to your two new loves. Tell me about your first one.
So my first one is Eloquent Rage by Brittany Cooper. And she talks about why Black women are angry, why they have every right to be. And she shares examples of her own experiences along with some research to show the ways race and class and gender are used to oppress Black women.
I've been seeing this one on Instagram a lot.
It's really good. I've been trying to read books that kind of challenge me and teach me things. And this definitely did that. It was really challenging, and it made me uncomfortable because I think as a white woman, kind of makes you face some things that
you hadn't thought about before.
Can be easy for us to ignore.
Right.
But I think it was really necessary, and it's something that I have used since reading it in the way I read other books or interact in the world in general.
Sure.
Just really opened my eyes to the experiences of Black women in our country. I'll probably read it again, too.
I feel like a lot of these types of nonfiction have come out lately.
Yeah, a lot.
Have you read other of this type of stuff, or is this sort of the first one?
This was sort of the first one.
Okay. So I was going to see how it compared to some of the other ones.
I know I have some others on my list, like This Will Be My Undoing.
Mm-hmm.
So You Want to Talk About Race.
Yep. That's the one I was thinking about.
And then I also am going to read soon White Fragility.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
Which is just kind of about, I'm pretty sure the author is white. So she's speaking to white people about,
okay,
you know, our privilege in the world and how to face that and break it down.
Right.
Not that you can get rid of your privilege, but recognizing it and being aware of it as you move about in the world.
Yes.
So, I mean, this book made me really, more than I already did, want to keep reading stuff like this, because I think it just showed me how much I have to learn.
Yeah. All right. So that was Eloquent Rage by Brittany Cooper. And what is your second new book you loved?
Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens.
Ah, yes.
So beautiful.
Yep.
That's another one that's just really stuck with me.
I think it's sticking with a lot of people. It seems to be selling like hotcakes.
It really does.
I'm so glad to see that.
I think it just came out of nowhere.
It did come out of nowhere. I remember when the publisher sent me an e-galley and I had never heard of it. And I almost just disregarded it because I was like, I've never heard of this. It's not on my radar at all. But then in the little email the publisher sent, they said something about Pat Conroy, who's my favorite author.
See, I haven't read any Southern fiction before.
I didn't feel like Where the Crawdads Sing, though, was super Southern.
No.
No, I felt like the comparison to Pat Conroy for me stemmed from the way she wrote about the marshland.
Okay.
And Conroy writes beautifully about the low country and the marshland of South Carolina. And she was in North Carolina, but...
Right, so...
That did strike me as very similar.
Maybe I should try Pat Conroy, because, I mean, that was one of the things I loved about Where the Crawdads Sing, was just the description of the marsh and how it was almost its own character.
You should try The Prince of Tides.
Okay, I'm going to do that.
It's his, like, most well-known book. It's not my favorite of his, but it is the one that is the most focused on the Lowcountry and the marshlands.
Okay, I'll give that a try. I'll add that to my never-ending
Yes.
TBR.
Yep, we all have those. Okay, so wait, let's go back and tell everybody, just in case they don't know, what's Where the Crawdads Sing about?
Sure. So I believe it's a debut novel. I think Delia Owens has written a lot of nonfiction.
Yeah, about nature, which is why the writing about the marshlands is so great.
It was really great. And I'm so impressed by her storytelling for a debut novel and character development. Those were the things I really loved. It starts out when she's a girl, Kaya, and you kind of follow her all throughout her life. And she was abandoned as a child and kind of rejected by her town. So the story is just about her survival by herself and the relationships she develops with people along the way. And there also is a murder happens. So there is kind of this mystery element too. It's like a romance mystery and a coming of age story all in one, which are like my three favorites. So
yep,
it was perfect. And it's just beautiful. The storytelling, the characters, the setting, it all has stuck with me. It reminded me of like a combination of The Great Alone and Beasts of Extraordinary Circumstance.
I haven't read the second one, but I can see the first one.
I think with The Great Alone, it's like Alaska was its own character too. And there's this survival element.
Right.
And a romance, which I also loved.
Yeah. I think she did a great job hitting the beautiful writing, and the writing itself felt very literary, but the storytelling was so propulsive as well.
Yeah.
Which I feel like sometimes in very literary fiction, you get all the writing, but the plot maybe is a little slower.
Exactly. And I struggle with that. I definitely need plot. So sometimes high literary fiction is not always what I'm drawn to if it's more writing than plot.
Right. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. So there's plenty of plot in this story. And I am drawn to characters that you can really feel invested in. And Kaya is definitely one of those.
She is an unforgettable character.
She is. And she's a really strong female character.
Yes.
Which I like.
All right. So that was Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. Another double stamped book. Actually, three of these come double stamped.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and this is interesting. Not only do three of these books come double stamped, I rated all three of them 5 stars.
That's so funny, because so did I.
So let's switch gears to a book you did not love.
So I picked The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt.
Okay.
I don't not finish books very often, but I also don't end up disliking books very often. I think I've just gotten to a place where I'm fairly good at knowing what I'm going to like.
Right.
So I did finish The Goldfinch, and I read it along with my dad, who's also a big reader, and neither one of us liked it.
Yes. Oh, neither one of you liked it. Was it the Vegas section that really drove you crazy?
Yes.
I feel like so many people say that.
I don't consider myself an uptight or prude reader, but the drug use felt excessive.
Well, it also was a little boring. They just sat around and did drugs day after day after day.
Like, this is an example to me of literary fiction that I can't get into.
Right.
It was too slow to start. It dragged when they were in Vegas.
Well, and it's long.
So long. I felt like it could have been shorter.
Right.
And then the ending wrapped up really quickly for a book that was like, what, 500 pages?
I think it was more than that. It's been a while since I read it, though.
I mean, I felt a sense of accomplishment after reading it.
Well, that's good. Silver linings.
Yeah. And I think because it was a Pulitzer Prize winner, there was a sense of I needed to read it or something, which I'm trying to abandon that feeling. No one needs to read anything they're not enjoying.
No. Says John Irving.
That's not a good way to go about it. And you'll probably end up resenting the book more anyway if you force yourself to finish.
Especially if it was one of those long ones.
Exactly. Because it's such a time investment.
Totally.
I feel like this is one of those books that people either love or hate. So it is kind of nice to be able to participate in the conversation about it.
Right.
But yeah, it just was not for me. And I know some people loved it, but
I did love it when I read it, but I remember tolerating the Vegas section.
Yeah. My dad and I kept talking about that. Like, when are we getting out of Vegas? Like,
yeah. But I loved the part before that. And I can't even remember the guy's name, but the antique store owner, is that right? I loved him.
Yes, I did too.
And maybe we should quickly tell everybody what it's about, because I think we've gone through this whole conversation.
I know.
I assume that most readers know what The Goldfinch is about by now.
I do, too. I feel like I'm not even going to be able to explain it because it's been so long.
I'm not either.
But I think it's basically like it starts with him as a little boy in a museum and there's something happens.
He steals a painting, doesn't he?
Yes, he steals a painting. Right. And it just follows him and how he kind of hides this painting and what happens.
A lot of it's set in New York, and then there's the Vegas section.
And then
section.
In Vegas. And that's the only thing I've read by her.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you had read The Secret History.
I have, and I have it.
I loved The Secret History more than The Goldfinch.
Okay, that's what I've heard from a lot of people.
It's super dark, campus novel, kind of messed up, which I love all that.
I love all that, too.
I don't think it's as slow as The Goldfinch.
That's good to know.
All right, so let's talk about an upcoming release you're excited about. This is, I think, maybe the 10th episode I've recorded. This category is killing my TBR.
I bet. So the one that I chose is City Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Ooh. And is she big magic, Elizabeth Gilbert?
She is, yeah.
Okay. Eat, Pray, Love, Elizabeth Gilbert?
Exactly.
Okay.
And she wrote one other fiction book called The Signature of All Things, which I've never read. So I've only read her nonfiction.
Okay.
But this sounds really cool, and I adore her. I actually got to meet her and sing karaoke with her.
Oh, no way.
Which was quite an experience.
That's hilarious. How'd that happen?
So I actually, when Big Magic was coming out, the publisher, Riverhead, did a giveaway where if you pre-ordered her book, you'd be entered to win this weekend in New York where you would meet her. And so I did
that.
And
you won?
And I won.
That is insane.
It was insane. And I completely forgot that I had entered. Because it's one of those things you do, and then you're like, well, I'm not going to win.
Sure.
And so I got this call, and I seriously just started crying. I was like, are you kidding me?
That is so funny.
It was really cool. So we went, my mom and I got to go to New York, spend the weekend. And one of the nights we were there, we met up with her and her publicist and someone from Riverhead. And we all sang karaoke and had dinner, and it was great.
What is she like?
Just like you would think she is. Just very fun and candid and vivacious and open and warm. She's really easy to
talk
great. To. Yeah. I think there was a part of me that was nervous. You know, you
totally
you
meet
go
your
to
heroes.
Meet someone. Exactly. And what if they disappoint? But she didn't. She was exactly as I'd hoped and more. So I definitely have a soft spot for her. So when I heard she was coming out with this one, I got really excited. And it's told from the perspective of a woman in her 80s.
Okay.
As she looks back on her life in 1940s in the theater world.
Okay.
And so Elizabeth Gilbert has described it as the lightest and funniest thing she's ever written.
Oh, all right.
Which that sounds different for her and right up my alley. So I think it comes out in June.
Yeah, June 4th.
So I'm very excited for that.
Could be a good summer book.
Yeah, exactly.
I tend to like books where there's an older woman reflecting on her life.
Me too. Have you read Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo? Yeah. It made me kind of think of that.
Oh, Lord. Well, I got to request this one now, too, because I loved Evelyn Hugo.
I loved that one, too.
All right. So that's City Girls by mm-hmm. Elizabeth Gilbert. And that is coming out June 4th. All right. So I like to finish every episode by playing a game called Rate It.
Okay.
It's a lightning round game where I throw out five bookish things, and it could be anything book related. And you rate it either 1 or 5 stars, just like how you'd rate a book. But you cannot use 2, 3, or 4 stars.
Okay.
Number one, reading a book club book you're not initially interested in.
5.
Good for you.
I say that, but I'm not always good at it.
No, but you do it. I would be a 1 just because I'm lazy, and we talked about this earlier.
That's one of the things that has been nice about the Bookly Club is we don't always have the same taste, but
right.
There have been books I've read that I wouldn't have otherwise that I've ended up really liking.
Oh, that's good. So it's not like you've regretted spending
no.
time with them.
Mm-mm. Plus, I would be okay with not finishing it if I decided I didn't.
Yeah. All right. Number 2, seasonal reading.
5.
I knew you were going to say that.
I used to not think I was a seasonal reader, but I definitely am.
For those of you who don't frequent Bookstagram, seasonal reading is a thing on Bookstagram lately.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everyone's talking about you get your winter books ready, the ones you want to curl up with under a blanket, the thrillers or something long and involved. And then the summer books, the light, fluffy and easy. And the fall is for big time literary fiction. I don't feel like I read that way.
I don't think I used to, but maybe Bookstagram has made me.
Right. Just because it's stuff you're seeing out there all the time.
There are definitely some books I'll read year round, like romance and thriller.
Right.
But I do tend to want books that maybe I can like sink into more in the winter, if that makes sense. And any book that takes place in the winter, I'd probably want to read in the winter.
Yeah. I feel like for me, what drives it more is how my life looks at those various times of year.
Mm-hmm.
So the summers for me, my kids are not in school and they do go to camps, but camps are not as long as school.
Right.
So I feel like I have a lot less time to myself. And when I am reading, I know a lot of people think they read more in the summer. I probably read less in the summer. And when I do get to read, I'm at the pool. My kids are swimming I'm in a place where I'm just fitting in my reading and it's not something I can concentrate on hard.
Yeah. So they need to be maybe lighter books.
Right. And then the fall rolls around and it's even worse because the go back to school period is for some reason really crazy for parents. I don't know why.
Maybe just an adjustment?
There's just a lot of paperwork and things
right.
you have to go to. And I don't know. I don't know why it's so crazy every year. But September and the same with get out of school. September and May
right.
are both very hectic for parents with little kids. So I can't wait to the day when summer becomes leisurely summer reading again for me.
I know. That's not me either. My summer looks just like any other time of the year. So, yeah, I don't read any more in summer than I
right.
do any other time. If anything, probably in the winter I read more because I work for a university, so we do get a 2-week winter break.
Yep. All right. Number 3, Friday Night Lights, the book.
1.
Did you read it?
No. I had it, and I think I gave it away because it's been sitting here for so long, and I just...
You know what? Good call.
Okay, good.
I read it. It's nothing like the TV show.
I think that's what someone said, and I was like, well, then what's the point?
I liked the TV show so much better than the book. The book is much more like straight-up football.
Yeah, no. Okay, I feel good about my decision.
All right, number 4, love stories that are not considered romance. So I would put Where the Crawdads Sing in this category.
5.
Which leads me to your answer. Yeah. Yeah, me too. And I don't like romance. I find it kind of cheesy, but there's certain ways if it pops up in other books that aren't really romancy, I do really like it. And Where the Crawdads Sing was one of those for me.
Yeah. I didn't think I liked romance as a genre, and I'm very particular about the romance I
right.
do like. But I think The Wedding Date was the first romance that I read, and I loved it. Probably like every month or so, I'll read one as a nice palate cleanser.
Right.
And I do really enjoy them.
I have liked a couple more recently than I ever have before. Like I'd call like One Day in December
mm-hmm.
and maybe How to Walk Away by mm-hmm. Catherine Sinner.
Yeah, I liked those.
I've liked both of those this past year. Maybe I'm changing.
Yeah, maybe you are. Our tastes are allowed to change.
Yes. And oh, mine have for sure. All right. Last one. And I think I know how you're going to answer this. Forcing yourself to finish a book club book that you don't like.
One.
I'm with you.
I think old me probably would have said five, but.
Me too.
When you have so many books you want to read, it doesn't do you or the book or the author a service to finish it if you're not enjoying it.
And you know what? There's only 24 hours in a day.
Yes.
And your reading time is limited, and I want to be reading good stuff.
Exactly. If you're not enjoying it, it's not challenging you, you're not learning something from it, then put it down.
And I also feel like if you continue to force yourself to read books you don't like or to finish books you don't like, you'll end up not liking reading after a while.
Yes. It'll put me in the slump too, because if I'm reading a book that I don't want to pick up, then I'm not picking it up, but I'm also not reading anything else. And so all of a sudden, you know, a week has gone by and I've read nothing.
Nobody wants that. All right. Tell everybody where they can find you online.
So they can find me on Instagram at readwithkat, and that's Kat with a K. I'm also on Goodreads. That link you can find on my Instagram account.
I love following you on Instagram. I think we have very similar book tastes, so I get lots of fun recommendations from you. And you're so good about posting regularly. Much, much better than I am.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions, especially since we're just starting out. Find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at sarahsshelves, on Instagram at sarahsbookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. Happy reading!